Good morning. We come to the fifth sermon in our sermon series on discipleship. We talked about disciples understanding themselves as called to follow Jesus. We talked about disciples being compassionate and merciful and humble. We've talked about the cross being central in the life of discipleship, and that they would understand themselves and their gifts as something given by God to build up the community, because the unity of the community is central. And now we come to the way of love. This is from the same letter that Paul was writing to the people in Corinth, the church in Corinth that we read from last week, but it's a little further down in the letter. The community was in a time of great strife. There was lots of bickering and tension and division. And this was the most important thing that Paul wanted to address in his letter to them. Last week, he stressed unity, talking about the body having many parts. And he was totally convinced that this signs of unity was a conviction, a true sight that God was acting in and amongst the community. And this unity of the loyal and committed followers was key. This week, he writes about love. In Greek, the original Greek that this was written in, he uses the word agape. And this particular Greek word is important to pay attention to because it's not the word that signifies romantic love between two individuals. That's called eros in Greek. So there are actually four words for the word that we translate as love in Greek. There's eros and agape and two others, but Paul intentionally picked the word agape, which means the unconditional love of God for God's people. Later, Thomas Aquinas described this type of love as to will the good of another. That's the love we're talking about. Brotherly, sisterly love, and Paul's insisting that the people of Corinth consider this seriously. He says that this love must be their way of life, their basic disposition. And he assures them that with this love, we experience God's unshakable grasp on our life. It is, in fact, the source of our greatest security. All the spiritual gifts in the world, all the generosity, mean nothing unless they come from this place of love for one another. We are urged to be imitators of Christ. Christ, who loved humankind so much that there were no limits to his love. He would do anything for humanity, including giving up his life. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Does this sound nearly impossible? In one sense, it is. It can't be viewed as yet another personal virtue, something we can achieve or perfect on our own. This is about a fundamental relationship to God. This kind of love is a gift given by God to the faith community. Without this, we are nothing. It is the reality of God's presence in our life and the very basis of humanity. All our other spiritual gifts spring from this relationship of love, which expresses itself in patience and kindness, enabling us to bear, believe, and hope, and endure all things. So it comes from God as a gift. And what we need to do in order to flourish is to learn what it means to live every day within this love and be illuminated by it, transformed and given new life by and through the love of God, which is revealed in the cross of Jesus Christ. For Paul, you could say this is what it means for him to be a Christian, to be an agent of God's love in the world, not seeking our own advantage, but working always on behalf of others. Everything we do in the church should be characterized by this love. The living church should be about transforming lives. Sadly, though, often the church has failed to live by this standard of love. One important example for Canadians was when the church as an institution collaborated with the Canadian government to operate residential schools for First Nations children. This was not done in love. Now we know the government's main motive was to, quote, get rid of the Indian problem, and, quote, to take the Indian out of the child. Today, the intergenerational cost of this misguided policy is much better known than in years previous. No love was underlying this sad process. Now, the United Church, our church, has apologized, and so have others, but much more is needed, so much more is needed for healing. And sadly, as you will know, the horror of this is still being unfolded today. If you want to know more about the United Church's response to the Kamloops Residential School grave discovery, there is a comprehensive and really well-written statement on the United Church website, united-church.ca. Throughout our lives, we are given the opportunity to grow in love. And this doesn't happen automatically. Spiritual practice and prayer is absolutely necessary for this to happen. These disciplines give us a way of stopping our running around and our busyness and contemplatively opening ourselves to God's boundless love, letting go of our own ego and our willfulness. Father Richard Rohr writes, "People often ask me how long they should pray. And I say, as long as it takes to get you to yes. If your heart and emotions are still saying no, no to the moment right in front of you, don't leave your place of prayer until you find yes, until the flow begins to happen and the constriction begins to lose its hold on you. Then," he says, "you're abiding in a place of abundance where you know there's more than enough of you left over, and you don't need to be stingy, guarded, or hold on to minor grudges. You can let a quiet love flow. You can let grace happen to you and through you toward the world around you." Long ago, one of my primary spiritual teachers taught me that there are three crucial spiritual tasks. I call them the three R's because that helps me remember. We are asked to recognize, to receive, and to reflect the love of God. To recognize it, to open up and receive it, and then to reflect it. Contemplative practice and prayer helps us to recognize, to see God's love at work in our lives and in the world. It is, first of all, an action rather than a pious sentiment or a feeling. It's a verb, like a flowing river, a love that never calculates or counts the personal cost, a love that isn't seeking to get its own way or to win the argument. As you know, our region within the new United Church of Canada structure held its third annual meeting Friday and Saturday. And I could see some examples of this agape love Paul writes about in our work together over the weekend. A couple of examples. Two proposals were brought before this court of the church. The first proposal was that Fundy St. Lawrence Dawning Waters region call upon communities of faith to prioritize the urgent need to work toward climate justice in 2021-2022 through prayer, liturgy, education, and action. This motion or proposal was approved. As a denomination, we've already committed to reducing carbon emissions in our buildings by 80% in 2050, in line with the Paris climate targets. Resources, money, and time have been dedicated to this goal, including a wonderful program, which if you haven't discovered it, I recommend it. It's called Faithful Footprints, a program of the United Church of Canada that helps us look at reducing our carbon footprint. The church has begun to redirect investments from fossil fuels toward climate solutions. And we are participating in ecumenical and interfaith advocacy and action. So this is a start. But actions are needed at every level of the church, including in every congregation or community of faith. Addressing the present ecological crisis will require changing hearts as much as changing minds, developing caring relationships with one another and all creation, building competing visions for a future that we want for coming generations, both here and globally. The second proposal we passed agreed that this region, Fundy St. Lawrence Dawning Waters, would become an affirming ministry. This is seen to be in keeping with the core values, mission, and vision statements of the region. And it also recognizes the wide diversity of people within the region's bounds. We seek to create safe and welcoming spaces for all people. And the theological basis for this is Jesus' own example, the way he lived his life, his example of love. And also it's related to the shared belief that the region is called to continue the story of Jesus by embodying the spirit of Christ's presence in the world. So our region will celebrate the blessings of and support one another in the challenges of our diverse life experiences, including, yet not limited to, sexual orientation, gender or gender identity, life experience, different abilities, ethnicity, skin color, generational culture, age, geographic location, economic circumstances, and other areas we have yet to discern. That's what it means to be an affirming ministry. Paul did indeed call followers of Jesus to imitate him in practical ways. And this sets the bar for what it means to be fully human and faithful disciples very high. Nonetheless, we need an example. We need a Jesus who is historical and relevant for real life, who is physical and concrete like we are. A Jesus whose life can teach us how to love one another and thereby be a force for peace and healing in our fractured and broken world. Another action, another example of what the region is engaged in, which I think is actively based on the love of neighbor, is the work urging the government toward ensuring a guaranteed livable income for all Canadians. On April 8th, there were vigils at politicians' MPs' offices all across the country. And there is a working group in this region as well as the other regions to keep this issue on the table. In my mind, the legacy of Paul, early church planter and faithful Jesus follower, centers around his preaching and teaching about love. His powerful writings concerning selfless, sacrificial, unconditional love and authentic Christian unity are as crucial for communities of Christians today as when he wrote it in the first century. That's a pretty good record. Whatever the future of the church might look like, and it will look different, I'm convinced that it will rest on this abiding foundation. It is this love for one another and for God's church and for God's creation that will be our anchor in challenging times, just as it has always been. When I put the phrase, love one another, in a Bible search engine the other day, there were 25 exact quotations that popped up in the New Testament alone. So we'll let this be the final word, a verse from John chapter 13. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, said Jesus, you should love one another. By this, by the way you love one another, people will know, everyone will know, that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. May it be so. Amen.